everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, off and running, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom, I'm getting a report. It's unofficial, but the wind gust yesterday was up to 80 miles an hour, according to some friends.
Where?
Up at Swan and Craycroft, which is just north of where I live. And the winds that roared through our area, we got a half an inch of rain, but it was mainly a wind event. And these are these storms, Tom. They're firing off the Mogollon Rim, and they're just headed south.
From a northeasterly direction to a southwesterly
direction. Yeah.
Over the Catalinas. Maybe they're getting a little roller coaster ride down, down the slopes.
Yeah, and this afternoon, about 4, we're expecting some more, at least in our area of the central foothills. So anyway, it's the Buckmaster Show on Thursday, the 25th day of July, 2024. Now a bit more past the mid-year of our 14th year. We're coming to you from the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio. The radio station's 1030 KVOI, The Voice. We have our worldwide live listening podcasts and so much more at buckmastershow.com. Our live line for our telephone interviews, and we'll be doing a couple of those today, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's begin now with Dr. Albrecht Clausen, renowned scholar of medieval history and someone I believe fits the description of a true Renaissance man to a T. Dr. Clausen is a University of Arizona Distinguished Professor of German Studies. He has published 130 scholarly books, hundreds of articles and book reviews, along with a dozen volumes of poetry and 4 volumes of essays and textbooks, including a handbook of medieval studies. He's won many honors, including the Grand Knight Commander of the Most Noble Order of the Three Lions, in recognition of outstanding services to German studies. Dr. Clausen is editor-in-chief of the international online journal Humanities. His most recent book is about the medieval court system and evil kings. In the fall of 2022, he spent a semester in Cairo, Egypt, as a Fulbright scholar, and he joins us now on the live line from one of the prettiest places in North America, Middlebury College in Vermont Champlain Valley. The school was created in 1800, and my goodness, what a view he must have. He's got the Green Mountains to the east and the Adirondacks to the west, and sounds like a pretty tranquil place to be. How are you, sir?
Oh, thank you very much, Bill. It's wonderful to be here, but I'm very happy to join you on the show. So thank you so much. It's great to be here. Absolutely.
Well, it's our pleasure. Middlebury is known for having one of the most immersive language programs in North America, and you're very much involved with that. Tell us a little bit about what you're doing.
Well, the idea of learning a foreign language in the best possible way is to provide an immersion experience. But there's sort of a problem. Many people think just go to a foreign country, live there, and by immersion or osmosis, you will ultimately be able to speak that language. That is probably a myth, because most people need direct instructions and help. And so what we do here is a very intensive program for about 7 weeks, in which students not only take classes on mornings, but they also study in the afternoon, and they have pledged not ever to speak a word of English. And so we are working with them, we're living with them, we go on hikes with them, we correct them all the time, we help them understanding culture, language, grammar, and literature, of course. So that is, in my opinion, one of the best possible ways to acquire a foreign language.
So are you saying that for 7 weeks, these folks do not speak a word of English?
They're not allowed to. If they're caught speaking English, they will be thrown out in a way. So there is the Damocles sword above their head, and they all abide by it. They really want to. These are the most intellectually most astute students. They're really just amazing cohort of people, and it's really a true delight as an instructor to work with them. I mean, you brush your teeth, you have to speak German. You eat breakfast, you have to speak German. For the very beginners, it's very hard. But for the others, they start chatting very quickly, and whether they make mistakes or not, they can communicate. And that is ultimately the goal that we pursue here. So.
Professor, I wonder with the advent of AI, artificial intelligence, some folks are saying the relevance of foreign languages. Do we even need them? I mean, my goodness, you can just ask AI.
Yeah, this is a deep trouble, and we all worry about it. But ultimately, I do not think that AI can really replicate. I mean, AI is probably a great tool for simple grammar exercises, for doing narratives. But ultimately, a foreign language is such a, or any language, is such a hugely complex issue with endless nuances, with endless shades of meaning. And we, for example, I teach, of course, mostly literature. And so we need to understand properly how to make it possible to understand all the minutiae and the fine details, the aesthetics, the spirituality behind it, and also the practical applicability to many different areas. So I don't know how far AI will go. We're all watching it, of course, and no one can tell what the future will hold. I don't know, but I'm still very much involved in translating also medieval and early modern texts. I'm involved in teaching, and I know how much students really need the human touch. That is the only true way of learning anything, the human touch.
There's quite a conversation going on, Dr. Clausen, in the regard to the future of higher education. The need for more funding, that's certainly a big issue there. But describe for us how you feel this discussion should be going or is going.
Well, look, we have faced similar fears in the past when the computer came in. We had the language labs. Then we had electronic textbooks, and so things are moving along, and there's no way for anyone to oppose the development, the technological development. So what we need to do, and I myself am very interested in that, going along with it and utilizing those new tools to the best of our abilities. We should not be confrontational, but we should be are collaborative, and I think that is the way of the future. So the computers and robots becoming our tools, our partners maybe, but I don't think we will become redundant in the future, but rather the opposite, because with the help of AI, we can do much more, and we can intensify the learning of a foreign language or anything, chemistry, mathematics, whatever, and fine-tune it much more for the individual need. So I'm not really that afraid of AI.
How about those that are priced out of the market, Dr. Clausen? The funding, the tuition, scholarships. There are some people that just college is just not possible for them, which is a shame. It's a shame.
Yeah, this is a global issue. And I think that you face a very interesting cultural divide between, let's say, Europe and the United States. But I think you have many other countries, Singapore, Malaysia, you have African countries and so forth, where all education is free. It is a principal question. How do you evaluate education? I mean, why do we give, for example, free tuition to anyone to attend high school? Why do we suddenly cut off right there and suddenly charge? It doesn't make sense, for me at least. In the German system, all upper education is free up to the PhD. Of course, there are some changes now as well there, and it's a huge cost factor. But the overall principle behind it is those are our future. And if we don't invest into our future, what are we investing into at all in the first place? So I think human beings are the most precious entity that are in this world. So I think that investment is absolutely worthwhile, and society at large, a good society, and I want to believe that the United States are a very good society, takes care of its own family members. That's our young generation.
All right. So when we
oppose to
excuse me, go
to higher education.
When we continue with you, Professor, let's explore a little bit the role of humanities in the near future. But right now, let's take a break. Dr. Albrecht Clausen is with us on our live line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. And he is speaking to us from the very bucolic and, I assume, very green Vermont's Champlain Valley. From Middlebury College, established in 1800. We'll be right back on the Buckmaster Show.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006. And the RTA is finalizing a new 20-year plan for RTA board review and approval to seek public feedback on the draft plan. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
Quality of Life Research Center has conducted more than 100 clinical trials in Arizona over its 20-year history. Because of their success, participants may have access to a variety of treatments under study that may not be available to people outside the trial. And participants may receive compensation for study-related time and travel. If you think you'd like to participate in a clinical trial, please visit QLMC.com to view our open trials and express interest.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Our live line for our telephone interview is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, and we are utilizing the live line actually exclusively today. Our two major interviews done telephonically. We go back now to Middlebury College in Vermont, where Dr. Albrecht Clausen, renowned scholar of medieval history, is on the live line with us, where he is very much involved in an immersion, a language immersion program. The language is German, and the students do not speak a word of English for 7 weeks. So that is a no-no. No words of English. Professor, I want to talk a little bit about humanities. And during the break, one of our listeners sent me an interesting message saying that some colleges and universities no longer see the relevance of humanities or social studies. But this listener points out that now more than ever, we need the humanities. And I'm sure that you would agree with that listener.
Yes, absolutely. Because, you know, if you do not understand who you are yourself, if you do not understand your cultural identity, if you do not understand the roots of your own culture, if you ignore just all your spiritual needs, then you will easily become a victim just of a monetary society. And this will then very quickly lead to a very empty shell. And so I firmly believe in the value of the humanities, particularly because I am a medievalist and early modernist. I'm working with these old sources, and it's amazing here. For example, I teach also medieval and Baroque poetry right now, to see how the students respond with such a hunger, such an almost desperate hunger for meaning, for identity, for exploring different dimensions. So if anyone says we don't need the humanities or social science, does not even understand or does not even appreciate what human culture, what human identity really is all about. So, and we know, of course, that those who graduate with a degree in the humanities are many times much better prepared for the professional market today, because they have a deeper understanding, because they are interculturally trained, because they are sensitive to different issues in human life, to fear, to desire, to hope, to the fear of death and the awareness of God, or whatever you might want to call it. In other words, the humanities make our graduate students, or students who are graduating from our college, to much deeper, much more meaningful human beings. That is the true value of the humanities.
Your online journal that you are the editor-in-chief of, the international online journal Humanities, is that open to anyone to visit that particular site?
Yeah, we have in scholarship now two models of publication. One is just a traditional one. You want to read something, you need either to go to a library or purchase items. And increasingly, we have online journals, online publications, and it's called open access, which kind of shifts the burden away from the publisher to the authors. That is a very difficult model. I'm not so sure this is the best way, but my journal is then open access, and anyone can go there online, find any article, download it, and read that that article. So it is a much more open-minded journal or medium to allow people to partake in the current scholarship that is available.
We were talking about the role of artificial intelligence in higher education. We might also talk about the role of humanities. Is there an AI component to this?
No, not at this point. Of course, we always check on plagiarism issues or something like that. But this is, you know, it is a medium really for scholarship all over the world. We have really wonderful scholars in Egypt, in Ghana, in Sri Lanka, in China, who all submit their work to our journal. So in other words, the technical medium available now makes available or possible the opening up of scholarship to a global community, which is really the way of the future. So I'm very, very proud of that, the fact that we suddenly give an option to, let's say, African colleagues or South American colleagues who might never have had the opportunity to publish to a global audience. And that is really wonderful.
Dr. Albrecht Clausen is with us, University of Arizona Distinguished Professor of German Studies. He's on the live line with us from Middlebury College. Before we let you go, for those who think, well, the Middle Ages, nothing ever happened. Well, I want to tell you, between 14th and the 17th century, get a load of this. The printing press, microscopes, telescopes, steam engines, eyeglasses, matches, the parachute, newspapers, blood transfusions, and even a submarine all made their initial appearance during those three centuries.
Also medicine was practiced in a different way. Of course, many ways also very primitive and not the best, but many ways, many times also rather sort of alternative medicine, different perspectives, much more holistically oriented. And that's sort of something we are coming back slowly and rediscovering really what the values used to be in the Middle Ages. Not everything was glorious and not everything is wonderful in our own time. So I think when you take a historical perspective, you gain better insight into, give and take, positive and negatives.
The medicine component is very interesting, Professor. Wasn't there a lot of herbal work that was done there? And there's been this really renaissance, if you will, in modern medicine, that some of these formulas, natural formulas, were really around, were being utilized hundreds of years ago.
Well, the irony is, if you think about people in general, if they all had lived under terrible, unhealthy, unhygienic conditions, the majority of people would have died. The opposite happened. So in other words, they had all the medicine, or mostly at least, necessary. Of course, when major epidemics hit, the Black Death, they didn't know what to do. But no one knew what to do about the Black Death until the late 19th century. So we should not throw the baby out of the proverbial bath. And so many times you have, let's say, bloodletting, a very interesting regular method to thin your blood, which in many cases helped. And of course, in excessive cases could have been deadly. So you have to take it all with a grain of salt to appreciate certain things. It's the same with our modern medicine. You don't want to take just only medicine without thinking any further, but rather we should rely on our natural abilities to heal ourselves. And that's sort of what we get out of the Middle Ages, for example, or early modern times.
This is a question I've never asked you in our many, many conversations. Mm-hmm. Was there someone that you looked to as a mentor in your schooling that pointed you in the direction of medieval studies, Professor?
My doctoral advisor, I give him much praise, Professor William C. MacDonald from the University of Virginia. I don't know whether he ever will hear this, but he was my lodestar in a way, because he showed me that a true teacher is someone who loves his or her students. And that's what I experienced, and that gave me the right impetus to become who I am today.
How about mentorship? How important is mentoring?
We all know, we're going back, I mean, Bill, we have about the same age, and we all know, right, how many times we failed at some point, how many times we made mistakes, and only because there were then some mentors who gave us directions, advice, who listened to us, and promoted us, pushed us, demanded more from us, thereby we grew. I think that is sort of the fundamental aspect of the humanities. No robot can take over, and no AI can do that, but rather it's sort of, in a very simple terms, the love between the mentor and the mentee. So I think that is a wonderful, beautiful idea, but that's really truly the way how to learn.
Middlebury is one of the oldest colleges or universities in the United States. That's a really fascinating background, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, the German school is the oldest. They were founded about 100 years ago. The German Immersion Summer School was about 100 years ago when that was set up. And then in the course of time, other schools joined us. So we have a school for Hebrew, school for Arabic, school for French, for Japanese, for Spanish, for Italian, and other languages. So the model itself that was set up 100 years ago has proven to be extremely successful and useful. And we observe this really clearly because we have students who come back all year after the year and improve their foreign language, whatever language it might be. So I think the model is an incredibly effective one, as tough as it is.
Is German considered one of the most difficult languages to learn?
Well, it depends on whom you ask. every language is difficult.
Yes.
Every language has lots of different rules, lots of irregularities. I can tell you that most people in the world who learn English face enormous difficulties. The English grammar is a very difficult subject matter. The English vocabulary is very difficult. Of course, German is a little bit more complicated probably than Spanish. That's the reason why many people prefer Spanish. But ultimately, it is more the question of what you want to get out of it. And I think since so many people here, at least, and elsewhere, realize how much German scholarship, German philosophy, German literature, German music, architecture, and medicine have really impacted the world, they come here in order to unlock that door to this major world of thinking, understanding, okay, intellectual world, and so forth.
Thank you, Professor Claussen. Be safe. We'll talk to you soon. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com. Welcome back. Midway point of the Buckmaster Show. I want to talk about tomorrow's guest, our Friday Focus interview. We will welcome back to the program the chief of the Tucson Police Department, Chad Kazmar. will be our Friday Focus interview. Joining me in the questioning of the chief. Question makes it sound like got a light bulb hanging from the ceiling. Anyway, will be Dylan Smith of TucsonSentinel.com. That's tomorrow. But right now, I want to tell everybody about Green Things, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. 13-acre site, everything you need for the garden and to replenish your garden, because the storm damage, depending on where you have been this monsoon, it's been pretty extensive and a lot of hail and different issues. So Green Things is the natural place to go by to replenish your beautiful things in the garden. Their website is greenthingsaz.com. And I want to mention their sister business, ZocaloVillage.com. Zocalo Village has pretty much everything you could imagine in the way of pottery for the garden. So lots of wonderful things going on. At Green Things, 53 years in the business, Jan and Jack, very much hands-on owners. When we do our telephone interviews, we're doing a couple of them today. That is presented by our friends at Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. We welcome back to the show, telephonically, retired three-star Army General, Lieutenant General Jeffrey Buchanan. Put in nearly 40 years with his Army career, which ended in 2019. At one point, he commanded the 6,000 troops on the southwest border. At one point, he led a military operation in Puerto Rico after Hurricane Maria. He did four tours in Iraq and one in Afghanistan. A graduate of the University of Arizona and its ROTC program, General Buchanan advises Homeland Security. He's one of five commissioners on the Arizona Game and Fish Board, and he's an advisor to something called Vet Force Foundation, helping veterans. He's a volunteer deputy sheriff in the Santa Cruz County Sheriff's Department. He resides on a small ranch with his lovely wife in Patagonia, about 13 miles north of the Mexican border. So there's always a lot to unpack with General Buchanan because he wears so many different hats. But right now he's up in Flagstaff enjoying some quality time with his son and his son's family and the grandkids. His son is a hotshot firefighter. General Buchanan, how are you? How are you enjoying the cooler temperatures of Flag?
Oh, I'm loving it, Bill. Thanks for your patience, and thanks for having me on your program.
Well, your son, I have nothing but admiration for these hot shots, the training they've got to do, and it just seems in North America anyway, these fires are getting hotter, they're more intense. An area that Ann and I loved was Banff and Lake Louise and Jasper National Park. It just breaks my heart to see some of the pictures coming out of that area. Now, the fire has reached the town site. They were hoping it wouldn't. It is burning buildings in Jasper. There was something on Twitter from the world-renowned Fairmont Hotel that the fire had now reached the grounds of the Fairmont. I mean, these fires, it just seems like every summer they're getting worse. What's your son's take on it?
Well, I think, he's a squad boss with the Mormon Lake Hotshots based out of Flagstaff. But and every year they start their season. It's been tough for at least the last 4 or 5 years, but they generally start their season in Arizona and New Mexico, and by the time the monsoons roll in, they're moving north. So he's been on a couple of big fires in both Arizona. He was on those fires over in Ruidoso, New Mexico, and then this particular rotation, they were up in Utah and got sent even further north up into Idaho. But he just got home last night for a 3-day break. We haven't seen him since April, so we wanted a chance to get to see him before he rolls out on the next mission. And they're really busy and will be at least until September.
Well,
I'm sorry, Bill. I was just going to say his take is, if forests are enabled to do a pretty good job with control burns and cutting understory. The people like him can manage fires rather than try to control them. They, you know, even if it's a lightning strike, they have plans to let it burn, you know, which is part of a natural cycle. The real problem is when they get in an area that hasn't been managed. And then I think he was on a fire in California 2 years ago, and it hadn't been burned or managed for 60 years.
Wow.
And it just blew up, you know.
Wow.
And it's really hard to control.
Well, I have a stack of stuff for you. I've got some game and fish material, and that was quite the incident. Our friends over at Tucson Medical reported actually right here first when we heard the news. There was a mountain lion in the courtyard, and it's kind of interesting how that animal got into that area. But the good news is apparently the animal was healthy, and there was a relocation done and apparently successful.
Yeah, you know, that's always good to hear, but a lot of times when we get large predators like mountain lions or even bears in urban areas, they become habituated to dealing with people, and that is never good. And fortunately, that was not the case with this cat. But if we have a lot of habituation, you know, we can't take a chance releasing them, moving them elsewhere, because then they just move right back to another town. And, you know, in the case of mountain lions, start preying on pets, and it's only a matter of time before they interact in a bad way with people. So our number one concern is always public safety, and then obviously the welfare of the animal, and we try to maintain a good balance with both of those. But I'm glad it worked out in this case.
You know, it is monsoon season, as we well know, and a lot of the desert wildlife in Arizona kind of wanders in search, I guess, of mates or moisture, and really they try to escape flooding. I didn't realize that wild desert tortoises, the plan is you want to keep these wild. These are not creatures that you want to take in and become a pet in the backyard, correct, General Buchanan?
Yeah, that's right, Bill. In fact, it's illegal to pick up or take a wild desert tortoise. You can report sightings or things if you're concerned about one to the Game and Fish. If you want one as a pet, actually the Game and Fish has a very active adoption program. We adopt out about 300 tortoises every year, and there are some requirements you need to go through to build a burrow for them, you know, in your yard, those kinds of things. But once they've been captive, once they've been held in captivity, we never want to release them because of the significant threat of introducing diseases to the wild population. And so, you know, here in Arizona, we have two species. Most of what we have are the Sonoran desert tortoises, and it's a healthy population. Up in the far northwest corner of the state, we also have Mojave desert tortoises, and those are, in fact, endangered.
I want to give our listeners a website if they're interested. First of all, if they come upon a desert tortoise, let the Arizona Game and Fish Department biologists know about it. You can email them the details with a photo. And that email is Turtles Project. Simply put, Turtles Project at azgfd.gov. So there you go. And something you have talked about before about the Mexican wolf and the boundary line is I-40. A Mexican wolf was captured north of I-40 near where you are up in Flagstaff. Why is I-40 considered the boundary, General Buchanan?
Yeah, so when the Fish and Wildlife Service, and Arizona Game and Fish, New Mexico Fish and Game, the White Mountain Apache Tribe all joined together to develop a plan for reintroduction of this species in Arizona, New Mexico, back in 1998, we agreed on a number of parameters, and one of them was to keep the wolves south of I-40. Here's why that's important. We're trying to maintain a buffer between Mexican wolves and northern gray wolves that are in Colorado and Utah. These are actually the same species, They're different subspecies, but if they link up, they're going to mate and create viable offspring. In the end, what that would mean is, in the long term, is actually potentially the elimination of Mexican wolves as a separate subspecies. So we're trying to maintain that protective status by keeping a buffer between the two different types of subspecies of wolf.
But these animals, farmers or people who own property and think of them as a threat, they're not supposed to take any action against the animal, correct?
Well, they obviously, they have a right to defend themselves if they're completely threatened. But in the areas where we have Mexican wolves, dominantly in the White Mountains in Arizona, we have very active programs with ranchers where we help respond to wolf sightings. We help harass and haze them so that they don't interfere with cattle. And in fact, if there's a cow dies on the range, we will move the carcass or pay for the rancher to move his own cow, just so that the wolves don't become habituated to feeding on cattle. So it's a big concern. We have, you know, we have had some indications or some cases of depredation, but not too frequently. And we work very well with all the ranchers, you know, to maintain a good balance between the different types of wildlife, between wolves, elk, deer, you know, and non-game species as well.
All right, we're going to transition into the situation in Ukraine and Israel with General Buchanan after we take a break. He will stick around with us on the live line as he's checking in from Flagstaff, Arizona. More with retired three-star General Jeff Buchanan right after this.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region, averaging more than $100 million in tax revenue each year. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review prior to a May 2025 election. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. And your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations, they receive no government funding.
please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Quality of Life Medical Center has served Tucson residents for more than 20 years. We understand the key to a long, healthy life is not just about getting the right medical treatment, but it's also about feeling good mentally and emotionally. Whether you're looking for preventative care or treatment for a specific condition, we're here for you. And we are accepting new patients for primary care, pain management, and sexual health. Please visit QLMC.com to request an appointment. Quality of Life. Our name says it all.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. This time of year, we send so many of our listeners over to a beautiful area of the Land of Enchantment. That is New Mexico. The southeast corner is very, very pretty. Not as populated as areas like that Santa Fe, Albuquerque, Santa Fe, Taos corridor, but equally as beautiful when you get up to Santa Fe, to Silver City, excuse me, with that mile high elevation. That's about 5,000 to 7,000 feet. I'm looking at their midday temperature, 87, so they're still in the 80s, and usually it's 10 to 15 degrees cooler over there than we have here in southeastern Arizona. Start your planning for your one hour that you'd have to drive pretty fast, but not impossible. Well, yeah, it is pretty much impossible, but no, it'd take you around 3 hours to get over there to Silver City. Start your planning by visiting Southwest New Mexico, spelled out, .org. We continue on the live line with our conversation with retired three-star General Jeffrey Buchanan, who appears on our program. Try to get him on at least once a month. He retired after nearly 40 years of Army service. In the first part of our interview today, we talked about his role. He's one of five commissioners on the Arizona Game and Fish Department, but I want to talk a little bit about the military action that's been going on now. Well, we're into the third year in Ukraine, and now 9 or 10 months in the Israeli operation in Gaza. General, the Israelis and the Ukrainians have got to be really kind of nervous, right? I mean, as they look at kind of the American elections coming up, at least with Biden, they kind of knew what they could expect, that they're kind of going to be in maybe somewhat unknown territory.
Yeah, I think so. You know, I'm not sure how nervous they are, but obviously solidarity between the U.S. and NATO are extremely important in our policies towards Ukraine and their fight against Russia. And you know, even though NATO doesn't have a direct involvement, obviously the U.S. is very important in its relationship with Israel and that support. And, you know, you implied presidential election, but obviously that's only part of the issue. Things change every couple of years with new leadership potentially in Congress. And ultimately it's congressional policy that is going to drive a lot of approval of aid and things like this. Obviously those are, even though they're both wars going on and people are in desperate situations and both of them depending quite a bit on U.S. for help, those are two very different situations. So I'm always cautious when we talk about them in the same breath.
Yeah, they're very different. And are you at all surprised the Israeli action in Gaza has gone on this long?
First of all, let me say, well, I know I don't want to have a discussion about, you know, the law of war and jus ad bellum and jus in bello again, but I will say that absolutely Israel had the right to defend itself. It was brutally attacked by terrorists. And now that we're uncovering some of the details of their abuses, I mean, just absolutely horrific. So I understand their response, and I've always knew that they had to respond. But when they set out as a goal that they were going to destroy Hamas, I was extremely skeptical. I mean, I think you can defeat Hamas relatively easily, defeat their ability to do a certain thing, but to actually destroy them, that was always going to be a tough fight. I don't know if they're capable of doing it unless they kill everybody, you know, honestly. So I think it's the fact that they haven't wavered from that central objective has been shaping what they've been doing and how they've been doing it. And I'll just say it's a very heavy lift.
Did we ever, when we were going after Al-Qaeda, I don't think we ever declared we are going to wipe out Al-Qaeda. Do you recall that?
Yeah, so obviously we were after all different parts of them. Bill, you know, I mean, you mentioned about my time in Iraq. If you think about Al-Qaeda in Iraq, which was a subset of Al-Qaeda at its height of level of violence in 2005 and 2006, they had hundreds and thousands of fighters. By the time we left in a very large way, which was, you know, at the end of 2011, they were down to less than 100 fighters. So
really?
we had not destroyed them, but we had certainly defeated their ability to do much of it. And of course, hindsight's always 20/20. But then we left, and instead of maintaining some sort of advisory capability with the Iraqi services, and you know, 3 years later, the new version of Al Qaeda in Iraq is ISIS. And, you know, look at all the damage they cost. And of course, we're right back there now. So, you know, history repeats itself. And I just hope that as these things go on, we learn more from our experience. I think it's foolish to think that we cannot be involved. We can be isolated. The world just doesn't work that way. And it's like it or not, we're going to have to be involved if we want rational leadership and you know, to help take care of people around the world. It's not our job to be the world's policeman, but certainly we're going to have to be involved either through support or sometimes direct action.
All right, I've got about a minute more with you. And Defense One, which you know is an online military kind of related online news service, they're reporting that every squad will get anti-drone gear that's going to be in the Marine Corps. That's a change.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, as things happen and there's a new evolution of different types of technology, we used unmanned systems, drones very effectively in both Iraq and Afghanistan. And it has only been a matter of time before the ability to employ them has become much easier and cheaper for our adversaries. Let alone countries like, you know, China or Russia. I'm talking even terrorists can go buy one and use it fairly cheaply. So that is a threat. It's going to continue to be a threat. And we have some fairly good means of defeating them, which we won't go into in a lot of detail here. But yeah, that's another part of what, you know, defending our airspace.
Okay, General Buchanan, we're going to let you go. Get back to your family there in Flagstaff, and we'll look forward to your visit in late August with you. Thank you very much.
Thanks for your time, Bill.
All right. Always appreciate
it.
Thank you. I always appreciate speaking with retired 3-star General Jeff Buchanan. That's going to do it for the Buckmaster Show. And once again, a program note, tomorrow, always have a great conversation. He's very transparent. The Chief of Police, Chad Kazmar, will be with me in studio. We try to bring him in every quarter. He's scheduled to be on tomorrow at 12:04. So that means I'll be back with you about 23 hours or so. But until then, Tom Fairbanks on the other side of the glass and me, Bill Buckmaster, wish everybody well.